Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Masters in Business with Barry Ritholtz on Bloomberg Radio.
This week on the podcast, I have an extra special guest. Joanne Bradford has had really a fascinating career in technology, marketing, and finance. She was chief revenue officer at Microsoft. She was chief marketing officer at SoFi. She had very senior roles at places like Yahoo, Pinterest, Demand Media, Business Week. She has a number of investments as really a entrepreneur and a venture investor. Domain Money is one of the big ones. She's also involved with Wealth.com, and I could give you a long list of all the things she's done. Kahoot, Super, Telly, just all these really fascinating startups. She has had just an unbelievably interesting career and is one of these people who looks at every role she's had in a company as a challenge and an opportunity. And she has really managed to accomplish tremendous things, not just at Microsoft, where she ran MSN's advertising and marketing, not just at Yahoo or Pinterest, but even a small startup like Honey, which she was president and sold pretty quickly to PayPal for $4 billion. Anytime I get to speak with Joanne, I always come away feeling like I've learned so much and gained so much from the experience. I found our conversation fascinating, and I think you will also. With no further ado, my discussion with Domain Money's Joanne Bradford.
Thank you so much, Barry. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's a privilege to have you. You and I had a conversation not too long ago, and so much of what you do is so interesting and so fascinating and so beneath the radar of the average investor's, you know, horizon. I thought, let's bring in Joanne and talk about what a fascinating career you've had. But I got to start with your education. You started, what is that, San Diego State, studying journalism and advertising?
Aztecs. I was a journalism major because it was the easiest major at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I went and took advertising courses and went to work at my college newspaper. One side were the writers, one side were the ad salespeople. They paid the ad salespeople. So I went in there and didn't turn back for 20 years. And so I've sold billions of dollars worth of advertising in my life.
So Southern California in the late 1980s.
Yeah.
What was the tech world like there?
There was no tech world, really. I mean, you know, after I graduated from college, I went to work in the Macy's management program because they were the only people that were hiring. It was either go drive a Frito-Lay truck or Macy's management program. I did that for 2 years. It was fun. Learned how to buy merchandise. But my love of advertising called. And so I ended up working at Business Week magazine for almost 13 years.
Right.
And
this was the previous Business Week before its acquisition,
yes,
by Bloomberg.
Yes.
So it was part of...
It's part of McGraw-Hill.
McGraw-Hill, who also owns S&P.
Yeah.
So what did you do at Business Week?
They sent me to a little known land called San Jose in Silicon Valley to sell advertising. And I sold ads to people like Hewlett Packard and Cisco when they had 100 employees. And I went to Seattle and called on a little company called Microsoft and learned everything I could about technology. Sun Microsystems was the hot ticket at that point in time. God. And I talked Business Week into buying me an Apple computer and signing me up for an AOL account. And I never looked back on tech.
In hindsight, all these ads you sold, you should have had them pay for it in stock, and it would have worked out even better.
Well, you do learn a lesson about equity-based comp, and I finally got that right later on, which we can talk about. But I was making commission at that point in time. So when I was a salesperson at Business Week, I sold more ads than anybody, and I made $2 million commission when I was 29 years old.
That's a lot of money.
It was.
How do you go from Business Week to Microsoft?
Well, Business Week wanted me to move to New York to become the associate publisher. 9/11 happened. My husband wasn't that excited to come to New York City. And so I said, I have to go beg, borrow, and steal my way into a technology company. So I got the job as chief revenue officer of MSN in 2001. Nobody believed the bust had happened. Nobody was buying spots and dots or ads on the internet.
Right.
And so I went to work there, and over the course of 7 years, I grew it from nothing to $2.5 billion in revenue. We did a deal with Facebook to represent them that led to their investment, Microsoft's investment in Facebook. We did video ads, the first video ads. We formed the Hulu Consortium. There were a lot of firsts during those periods at Microsoft. It was an amazing, amazing time in my career, and Microsoft was an insanely good company to work for, to learn how to work at an engineering-led company.
Huh, really, really intriguing. You know, we look at these economic busts or these market crashes, and it's obvious in hindsight what spectacular opportunities they were. What did you see in 02 or 03 that led you to say, I know, let me find one of these broken-down tech companies and start something fun there?
Well, you know, so at Microsoft, when I went there, I knew that people were spending more time online. And I knew that advertising dollars would eventually follow that. We had to convince the industry, and I had to go convince people like Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola and Walmart that they should spend money with Microsoft. They were spending most of their money with Yahoo. Google wasn't on the scene yet. And so we did crazy things. We did flyovers on the front page because that made marketers feel good and feel like they were doing
flyovers
something.
Flyovers mean someone lands on the page and it's like a takeover.
Yeah, takeovers. Like, that was the hot thing. You could sell a takeover for $1 million a day at that point in time. So I learned so much, and Microsoft was like a startup inside of a big company for me. I worked my last job there. I worked and reported to Satya Nadella, which
Part
was amazing. Yeah, amazing.
He's done great things as the third CEO of Microsoft, really has led them back to great success. If you're doing MSN at Microsoft, how do you end up at places like Yahoo and Pinterest?
Well, so when I went to leave Microsoft, I'd sort of done everything that I could do up until I was a corporate vice president. There was 125 of us. And I was like, I want to go really be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start something. And I went to a little startup that was a failure. Like, not all startups are great. This one had taken $100 million, didn't really have a product. And I spent 6 months there and said, get me out of here.
Right. By the way, safe to say, most startups are going to crash and burn.
Are going to crash and burn. You know, it's romanticized. It's hard to navigate as an employee. You don't know what to ask for, what to look at. So then I knew the Yahoo folks, Jerry Yang and Sue Decker, asked me to come in and help them in 2008. Again, a giant crash. Like,
right.
So I went to Yahoo and worked on their revenue and sales and marketing for a few years. And then I really still had the entrepreneurial itch. So I went to a company called Demand Media, which was sort of the first reverse engineering of the algorithm. We looked at what people were searching for, you know, how to make a smoky eye, how to write a check, how to make a strawberry margarita, and then we'd write that content. And it was called Demand Media, and we took it public. We were doing $450 million in revenue. Google changed the algorithm and wiped out the business. And so everybody out there that is AI dependent, remember, the algorithm can change.
It's really true. If you are at all interested, you and I have talked about LinkedIn versus Twitter. If you're on someone else's platform, as opposed to your own website, you're absolutely at the mercy and the whim. It doesn't matter if it's Elon Musk or Google just tweaking to get better results. If the algo changes and it affects how often people see your work on that platform, it's a very difficult set of circumstances.
Yeah. Everybody out there that has dependencies on those platforms needs to figure out alternative channels and alternative ways. And, you know, that is just an important, important task for people. You can't just optimize. You know, Google will change the algorithm, they'll change the UI, they'll change the rules, you know, regulatory changes will come. I've seen every change possible impact businesses. I mean, remember when we used to sit around and talk about the Facebook news feed? Like it was, you know, we don't do that anymore, right?
So to just put a little meat on the bones, this isn't just Google and Facebook. It's anybody that's a creator, an influencer, a producer of content. So it's going to be YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and LinkedIn. And I don't know what comes next, but whatever comes next, it's their platform. Stop and think about how much time and effort people put into things like Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. And you have zero control over what that final product looks
like.
That
is correct.
It's really shocking. So you see the change at Google. It crushes Demand Media. Yep. Where do you go from there in your survey of the best tech companies in Silicon Valley?
Well, at that point in time, I was like, wow, I've been selling internet ads for a long time. I would like to do something different. So I went back to my roots and I became the president of the San Francisco Chronicle. And why I did that was because I felt like if you're a Bay Area native and you use SFGate, it is not a great product.
Right.
And I really felt like San Francisco and the tech world should have a bigger voice.
It's a world-class city. It should have a world-class media, right?
It should. You know, at that point in time, I was the independent director for Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg. I helped them leave the Journal, raise their money, and ultimately I helped them sell it to Vox Media. But I had written a strategy at San Francisco Chronicle for Hearst to sort of reinvent that. And there wasn't really a ton of appetite for it. So I spent 6 months there. Again, I do not mind cutting and running if it's not working out right for me. Pinterest had called several times. I loved Pinterest. I knew Pinterest would be big. So I went to Pinterest as the head of partnerships. I set up and sold, I hired 125 ad sellers, account managers, and a team to go out and sell the first promoted pins. My first hire there is now the chief revenue officer there, Bill Watkins. He's a great, great guy. And we went out and sold the ads. And I knew that Pinterest would be big. I went in there and the valuation was below $1 billion. And I left after 2 years. And at 2 years, the valuation was $13 billion. And so that was a fun run.
Right? I'll say that's a hell of a run, right? One to 13.
Yep.
And then what eventually was the bridge between Pinterest and SoFi in 2015?
Well, again, I you know, sort of took stock and I said, look, what the heck do I do now? I've sold every ad. I've sold videos. I've sold, you know, keywords, done deals with every single person in the world in the ad tech business. And so I said, I need to go learn something completely new, and I want to work in an industry with new people and new ideas. And a friend of mine that I knew from Business Week said, hey, I work at this little company called SoFi, and they do student loan refi. And I've always been passionate about money. I think people should really, you know, be educated about money, think about their money. You know, student loan debt is one of the biggest problems in America. And so I said, oh, this is interesting. So I met the founder, and I said, look, I don't care if you fire me. I just want to try to do this job. He was a hedge fund guy, and he said, look, I don't know anything about marketing. I want you to build this brand like it's a multi-billion dollar brand. I want you to take risk and let me know what the risk is. I want you to hit the CAC, which is customer acquisition cost. Mm-hmm. And I want you to make sure that we underwrite loans at quality so we can sell them on the capital markets. And I said, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I will get it done.
So that's very much like what takes place with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, where they're buying conforming mortgages. So the banks now have the cash to make more loans, and then they sell it to Wall Street. This is sort of like Sallie Mae, same basic concept, only private sector.
Private sector. So we would, and the premise of SoFi was that students that went to good schools and were getting law degrees and MBAs and had high student loan debt and engineering schools were not going to default on their loans, that they were going to be employable for as long as they wanted employment, and they weren't going to default. And so we really underwrote great qualities of loans. And so we did that. And then we got into the personal loan business, which we were, when I left there, we were doing about $3 billion a month. I was there 2015. There were 75 employees when I joined. We were doing about $10 to $20 million of loans a month. When I left, we were doing $1.5 billion of student loans and, you know, about 1.5 of personal loans of volume a month.
Wow.
That's a lot of funnel. That's a lot of funnel.
$30-40 billion a year. That's a lot.
And so, you know, you had to learn how to, you know, make deals, drive lead gen, build a community. And I would say that SoFi was and is beloved amongst that segment that helped them refi their loans. A very interesting fact that we learned while I was there is that people, if they had a lot of money at play, they would refi their loans. Mm-hmm. But if it was a little bit amount of money, they would say, oh, it's kind of a pain, I'm not gonna do it.
Right.
And so the magic number was $388 a month. If you could save them that, then they thought it was worth it. Which I thought was interesting. Like, why wouldn't you save $200 a month, you know, to refi your
loans?
Behavioral
psychology is
I know. I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, no, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Before we talk about the chief revenue experience, let's talk a little bit about Honey. $4 billion for a relatively young startup, that's a giant win. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Honey. You were president of Honey? Is that
I was
the title?
The president of Honey.
What? How did you find your way to Honey, and what made you think, I know, PayPal, this is a perfect fit?
So how I ended up at Honey, in Silicon Valley, Sheryl Sandberg used to hold dinners, women in Silicon Valley dinners, where we'd all meet each other. I met an amazing woman there. Her name was Emily White. She works at Anthos Capital. She had held the COO job at Instagram and Snapchat, and was an early investor in Honey. And when I told her I was leaving SoFi after 4 years, just because I was done with my financial services chapter until now. And she said, hey, I've got a company for you in LA that I'm just about to invest in with two great founders. Can you go meet them? And I said, what's it about? She said, well, it's a coupon code company. I said, absolutely not. Who wants to work on coupon codes? Are you kidding me? And she said, no, just go meet them. And I went and met them, George and Ryan, two of the best founders I have ever worked with in my life.
And to be fair, when you say it's a coupon company, it really isn't. It's a web technology that operates in the background, okay, like a coupon, but it's really a shopping search engine to find better prices. Am I doing it justice?
You are, Barry. So their insight was that finding a coupon code was a pain.
Yes.
Right? And you always want one. And so they built a browser extension on Chrome that you could download in two clicks. And when it detected checkout, it would say, look at all the coupon codes, query them all, and apply the right one. And so it was a great service to consumers. And what happened was we launched it with gamers playing YouTube on their desktop, and a little gamer called Mr. Beast.
Okay.
So we were his first advertiser, and we did a deal with him. He made an ad. You can go look it up. If you look up Mr. Beast Honey ad, an ad comes up. His collective ads, I think, have been seen, you know, I'm going to say billions, three yeah. plus, close to 4 billion times.
Wow.
Every kid in America knows what Honey is. Every kid in America was telling their moms and their dads they needed to download Honey in order to save money. The marketing, the team did it. I didn't create it, but they did a great job of telling a story very clearly to the consumer and getting them to take action. They started with gamers, then they went to YouTube makeup people. Who doesn't love a Sephora coupon? Did you just get the Sephora coupon code for the sale this week, Barry? It's like crazy.
I missed that one.
You missed that one.
But I will tell you, it's annoying as hell as you're about to click the purchase, do you have a coupon code? I don't know. I didn't think of it, but now that you're mentioning it, should I have a coupon code?
Well, they should tell you there aren't any. they should say there are none, because then you'd feel better.
Right.
By saying, is there one, you feel like you're missing something.
There have been times where, do I really want to buy this mailbox for $300 without the 20% off coupon code? The prompt loses them a sale.
It does. And, you know, cart abandonment is a big deal. And so this helped improve that. The revenue model was affiliate. So we got a cut of the transactions that would go through there.
Plus, the data must be astonishing.
The data, they were very clear, the founders, that they were not going to sell the data and they were going to protect the consumer at all costs.
But I mean the data to the company that's using the code. You could say, here's how we've changed the cart abandonment. Here's how the upsells have gone. Here's how the average carts, like that internal data. And I don't mean like the Facebook reselling stuff that most people over 40 are concerned about, but just the how can we make you better as a retailer?
100%. And you saw, you know, you saw where people came from, how they executed it. And so we built some really great products for the merchants. The funding story of Honey is interesting. The founders, George and Ryan, went to every venture capitalist in Silicon Valley, and everyone turned them down.
Because it was just, coupons?
They sort of turned their nose at coupons, and they also turned their nose at desktop, not mobile. Mobile was the thing at that point in time. And they were like, everything must be mobile. It would be like today, you saying we're doing something old and everybody's like, everything must be AI today, right? So everybody said no. And so they raised money. They found Anthos. Anthos got on it. There was a bunch of other private investors that did very, very well. So let's go to the part where PayPal comes into it. So everybody's like, why? Everybody was surprised when the headline came out. PayPal buys Honey for $4 billion. Shocked. And I say to them, don't be shocked. What Honey had was 20 plus net new active users. That was PayPal's metric at that
20
point.
Plus 20 million
net new active users.
Wow.
That they could add to PayPal's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It was a profitable business, so it didn't have a negative impact to the P&L. And it also brought new engineers and new thinking and a different shopping strategy to PayPal. So, you know, people always come to me or they're like, oh, this company should buy that company.
Right.
And I just go through the checklist. Do you have a ton of users? Do you have some path to profitability or better yet, profitability?
Right.
And do you have strategic thinking and or talent that would give insight? And so PayPal was smart. It checked all the boxes on that. So it was sort of a no-brainer. We did, you know, it was a short time after I joined that we made the transaction, and it was a short time before COVID. We closed the deal January 2nd of 2020.
Right. And I'm assuming COVID didn't really hurt them when everybody's
COVID
home.
COVID was excellent for Honey.
Right? Everybody's home shopping online. Yeah. I got to think, turns out, we're not hurt by this acquisition. This is right in
it was great.
What's happening.
We were our biggest problem was creating ads, new fresh ads for Honey. Every employee was shooting ads in their house. I was like, kids, we're making Honey ads on our iPhones. And it was a really, really fun time to be there and to be part of such an exciting acquisition. So what it really taught me, you know, out for your listeners out there is, you know, when I went in to talk to that company, I asked for three things. I said, can I see the last three board decks? And can I see the roadmap? And can you show me your revenue and your profitability? And they had no problem with it. So as a senior level employee or a potential board member of companies, that's what I do. I go look through those because over a course of 9 months, you can see if people addressed a problem, seized an opportunity, know how to talk about things, know how to think about things. And the Honey guys passed all those things on with flying colors for me, and they were awesome human beings. So
you're talking the way many venture capitalists talk, but I know you well enough to know you don't really think of yourself as a VC. I know you're an investor in a lot of early stage companies, but when someone says, what do you do? Your answer isn't venture capital.
No, I'm a, I think I invest with my human capital, right? Mm-hmm. I try to get, you know, a significant stake in a company and something that I believe in something that I can help accelerate. So it is a little bit the same process and how I spend my time and effort. And it has to be aligned with my values, you know, so that's how I think about it. That's how I've made my choices. I've had a few pivots in my life on it that have served me well. And I think, you know, I think you can figure out almost anything if you've had experiences in, mm-hmm. in startups and doing things. Like you've built many things. You know how to do it. You know, right, what's going to happen. And you have to be very open to it. So I was very, very open to coupon codes. I was open to Pinterest. I was open to a financial engineered product for student loans.
Right.
You know, I like things that have not been done before. I like things that are white space in a market. And I think there's just a giant opportunity for talent to find those and to think about it. Don't take the first obvious one, because that's kind of painful.
Right. So let's talk about some other startups that you have advised or are advising right now.
Yeah.
What is Super?
Oh, Super. They help you save money on travel, and then they have a subscription service that helps people earn money. It's a company based out of Toronto with a really great young founder duo that have built something to help people get deals every day. And it's an app that is helpful in ways that Google isn't, and they're trying to combine all those experiences and give you ultimately a cash management tool someday. Huh. Like everybody will eventually be a financial services company or an advertising company. Like that's just the way it goes. Like
right.
I don't.
All roads lead.
All
to
roads
that.
Lead to. Those
so let's
two
talk
things.
About a financial company.
Yep.
Wealth.com.
Wealth.com. A really great company that is building AI technology for making trusts, wills, estates easy to manage. Lawyers spend and run up bills to collate your paper, to show you where things are. If you wanted to leave me your watch or I wanted to leave you a Birkin, it would cost a lot. And the lawyer in Wealth.com, you can go in and change it very simply.
And it's different in every state. There are different rules.
They have are compliant in every state. It is a very strong platform for advisors, RAs, and you know, a lot of them are using it. At Domain Money, we use it because most people don't have trusts set up properly, and so they have done that, and they're a B2B company right now, and I think eventually they'll be a B2C company.
So let's talk about Domain Money, since
yeah.
you brought that up. Tell us a little bit about what you did starting up Domain Money last year and some of the all-stars you're working with.
Yeah. I worked with a certified financial planner called Katie Song when I was at SoFi, and she did a plan for me personally and answered the questions. Can I retire? Can I send my kids to school? Should I buy another home? Can I go on vacation every year for a month? Like literally went through my budget, my spending, my potential spending, and my investments. And I loved it so much that I said, let's build a business when I have a moment in time. And so we started working on it. Then Adam Dell was working on Domain Money. He came to me and said, hey, I'm working on this. I said, I've got, you know, this product with Katie Song. We put them together in November.
Now, let me interrupt you and
yeah.
just point out for the listener, Adam Dell has a brother named Michael.
I've never met Michael.
Who did something with computers back
yeah,
in the
I 90s? Yeah, I think so.
Something like that?
I think so.
And he also happened to set up a little thing called Marcus at Goldman Sachs.
He did. He sold, Adam was a VC, and then OpenTable was one of his runaway successes. And then he sold Clarity Money to Goldman Sachs and ran Marcus for a little while. And
very different, OpenTable.
Very different.
But that's just a pure technology to drive reservations,
yeah,
which I don't know anybody that doesn't have that on their phone.
I mean,
literally, it's ubiquitous.
It is. You know, Resy versus OpenTable, we can have
you
that
gotta
discussion.
You got to use them both because you need competition.
Of course you do. It's like an Amex and a Chase card. You have them both. So Adam really, we have a big vision that there's a very big opportunity out there for people that are not in need of an AUM advisor and that don't want to do it themselves. There's a giant gap in that market, sort of, you know, the Home Depot Lowe's of financial services, right? Where you you want a little more help, the Equinox of it, the pre-novo of it, where you need help, but not forever and not at the expense. And I manage my money both ways. I have AUM and I do some, you know, flat fee on my own. And so we built this product called the One Page Plan that will literally analyze what you spend down to your DoorDash, down to your credit card, down to your Amazon, and then look at your investments and tell you, you need to save $63,000 a year for the next 10 years to get even close to where you're going to be. And here's the five action items you need to take. And so we offer that plan for $2,500. If it's more complex, we offer a strategic plan or a full comprehensive plan where we'll help rebalance and do your portfolio for $7,500. We have, you know, people coming to us every day just on word of mouth. People are confused and overwhelmed. They love a, you know, TikTok, you know, budget tool. They can't do it themselves. They need more help. And so that's the place in the market that we're serving. You know, I'd say if I had to describe the consumer, they're sort of 38 years old and they wake up and they go, wait a minute, crap, I didn't do all these things.
Tax day was Monday.
What did I forget? Why didn't I set my Roth IRA up? Why didn't I start my college fund? You know, you put it off every day and you shouldn't. Nobody here that listens to this show should not have a financial plan. Even if they did it themselves, if they had someone do it for them, you have to have one. Otherwise, you shouldn't be listening to the show.
You have some amazing partners with this. I feel like I want to throw a ringer in because people are... So some of the early engineers from Amazon Web Services are part of this. Mark Benioff, who's certainly super well-regarded out in Silicon Valley, Palantir and all that. Some kid named Ashton Kutcher is involved. Like, I'm trying to make up a name and I can't. That's an incredible set of partners for what's essentially not even a year old startup.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Adam's track record and relationships were able to attract quality investors and quality talent. And now we're just trying to deliver an unbelievable experience for people. If you don't like it, we'll give you your money back. But we have people that are just delighted every day with it. And that's the goal. You know, we want people to have more financial control in their lives. It's too important. You know, it's, for me, it's a value system and a belief system and what you do with your money and how you think about it and how you live. And so that's why I got involved with Domain Money. And it's been very rewarding.
It sounds like it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So, I want to talk a little bit about when you were in Silicon Valley and working as a woman in what was very much a male-dominated technology field. And I guess the thought was, I know, let me find another male-dominating field. Let me go to finance and see what I could shake up there. But I use that phrase on purpose because I know you've been very influential in different fields from the inside. Tell us a little bit about the evolution that we've seen in technology and now finance.
Yeah, let's just, in my early career, many rooms I went into, and still today, I'm the only woman in those rooms. And so I take my responsibility pretty seriously that I have to bring the voice of other women into the room. I work with an organization called the Female Quotient, mm-hmm. How it started, and everybody should go follow it on social. They have viral videos. They had one go viral with 100 million views the other day.
Wow.
They started doing events at CES and South by Southwest and trade shows all around the world where they created a place for women to go and convene. And all of the power women went there. They called it the Girls Lounge. You could go in and get a hair blow dry and a makeup and have a glass of champagne. It has since turned into the Equality Lounge, and they do programming in every one of those lounges, and they let everybody in. Everybody is welcome. You don't have to have a badge to the show. They're like, look, if you're in town, come by. If you're support staff and you can't get into the party, we don't believe in that. So everybody comes. It's one of the most powerful places at CES, at Davos, at South by Southwest. What it has reinforced for me is that women need to convene. They need to support each other. They need to see each other being successful and how that's normalized. So for men, and Barry, you and I have had this conversation, I think it's important to, number one, if I ran a company and I was a man, I would give them allowance or budget to go convene as women with other women in their industry. Tomorrow I'm going to the CNBC Changemakers, which is their women initiative that is launching this year. It would be a great afternoon gathering and talks by other women that have made significant changes for the year. And there's just a great opportunity to network and connect at those things. If the leader from your organization goes out and shows up in the community, it's going to attract other people from the community, right? It's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. And so that's number one. Number two is that you really have to give people responsibility. I asked for responsibility at every turn in my life.
I was about to bring that up because you've told stories about Microsoft.
Yep.
You told stories that I've heard at Yahoo where you went to senior management and said, listen, I have more bandwidth and here's what I want to do.
Yeah.
What are those conversations like? How do they go? And is everybody always receptive?
They're not always receptive. But look, today, putting an idea down on a piece of paper and sending it to someone is free. And what it shows people is how serious you are about that idea and that you've put some thought into it. And those have been pivotal turning moments for me in my career, where I took pen to paper, and you can do it with AI now, so it's not even that hard, right? I take notes on everything I do. I spit it into, I like Bard's tone of voice better than ChatGPT, but that's just me. And I'm like, okay, write me a proposal based on these five things I just saw, and what would it be? And then I'm like, meh, should I do this? Should I not do this? But I did the same thing in my early days. At Business Week, I was like, hey, we need to go buy a URL. Okay. We, and you know, like convinced Business Week that we should put advertiser links on a page in the magazine. I'm like, I will get money for that page of advertising. So we sold people's URL listings on a page in Business Week. We sold a crossword in Business Week. I was like, let's put a crossword in there. I think it's a good idea. You know, like you just have to keep putting ideas forward, and then people will see that. And so as a woman, I said, that's how I'm going to break through. That's what I'm going to do.
What happened in a place like Microsoft that was very much an old boys club? It's Bill and Steve and the rest of the crew. When you say, hey, I want to convene a group of women to talk about how we could do better at Microsoft, do they take it seriously? Is there a little snickering? Like, what's
no,
the
they
response?
They said great. They said great.
This is post DOJ antitrust case.
Yes.
So there was a little sensitivity as to how they looked in emails and elsewhere, I would imagine.
Yes. I worked more closely with Steve there and still keep in touch with him. He has a woman, Gillian Zucker, that runs his operation there, that is amazing. Also, I think
at the Clippers, or
yeah, at the Clippers, yeah. And the Forum now, and Intuit Center, and has just unbelievable responsibility. And
is that a sea change from 20 years ago?
He always gave everybody opportunity. I didn't feel there was any gender bias in his approach. Like he was just like, you know,
get it done.
Know your numbers, get it done. And, you know, I've always sort of worked for and signed up for tours of duties with people that I felt were just like, yeah, get it done. And so I think it's just important that you give people the opportunity. And I don't care if it's, you know, male or female, but to put ideas forth on how they want things changed, because they see them, they know them better than you do. And like I saw the video opportunity. So I did a thing called Live Earth, where we 7707, where we beamed music around for 24 hours.
Oh, sure. I remember.
Yeah. That was, you know, I went to Microsoft.
That was you? I had no idea.
I did that with Kevin Wall, and Bobby Shriver helped me, and you know, we had every artist in the world doing that, and it was to promote Microsoft's video player, and it was the largest streamed event globally until that guy jumped out of the plane on YouTube, which was a long time. And I, you know, took the risk. It was, Microsoft was not a sustainability focused company at that point in time, and they were like, huh, Joanne, this isn't so great. I'm like, I'm gonna pay for it with advertising. And I got General Motors to sponsor it, and it was a huge success. But we wrote that up and took it in and presented the P&L for it and got it done. So it's anything's possible when you put it to paper.
So you're at maybe not a giant company like Microsoft, but a smaller firm that maybe isn't paying as much attention to gender issues because they're swimming as fast as they can against the tide. And you bring up an idea, hey, I want to convene the women on your investment committee or the women who work in your sales group. What's the response like from companies, and what are the net results when you get a group together like that?
Yeah, I'll talk about the Pinterest experience. When I worked at Pinterest, I was much older than the average employee. A lot of employees were starting to have kids, and the moms were really sort of overwhelmed, right? Because it was a startup environment. We were going hard.
And am I remember correctly, was Pinterest very much a female user base?
Yes, it was.
Right? Like 80%, some crazy number?
Yes. And we were 30% women when I was there, so which was interesting. And the moms wanted to convene. And so I said, just give me an hour of meeting space. We just want them to get together and share information and knowledge. Things as basic as, you know, how are you dealing with preparing meals for your kids to my recruiter nanny, what she had to fire her suddenly one day, and what do you do in that situation, and how do you communicate that to your boss, your manager, in those kinds of environments. And I will say today that Pinterest has carried that on, and I still talk to many of those women. I did a group talk for Pinterest the other day, where there's many of those mothers that say that was the difference between this being bearable and unbearable for me. This was the difference between me feeling like I'm failing at my job or doing well at my job, that I have some common ground. And so let people find common ground. You don't have to control everything. And I just think women, mothers, caregivers really, really need to convene and give them permission, give them space to do it, because it will make them more committed, better employees, and more productive on every level. Those things are not hard. They're not expensive.
So I have to point one thing out that I'm fascinated by you, and I don't know if this is coincidental or just a component of your personality, but it seems that each of your major career events all seem to take place in these wild dislocations. So you start at Microsoft in the midst of the dot-com implosion.
Terrible.
Right? NASDAQ down 81%, peak to trough.
Yeah.
The next gig starts pretty much in the middle of the financial crisis.
Yes.
And then the Honey transaction, literally day one of the pandemic.
Yes.
Is it that you just see opportunities when there's sort of mayhem and everybody's running around with their heads cut off? Or is this just some crazy dumb luck?
I mean, I've asked myself that question. You know, all of my friends would tell me never to do the jobs that I took.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's some terrible advice.
Yeah, I don't take it. My youngest daughter told me this, and it's a good friend of mine, just wrote a book that's titled it, Nobody Cares What You Do or Where You Work.
I have her coming in next month.
Yeah.
From Barstool Sports.
Erica worked for me and with me for 10 years.
Oh, I had no idea. Yeah. That's completely coincidental.
Yes.
I love the title of that book.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I would lament about it, my daughter would just go, Mom, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares what you do, what you put on LinkedIn, what you say, where you go. So you need to just really get over it.
Kids keep you honest, don't they?
Keeps you really, really honest. And so, you know, I don't think, you know, when I started working, it was go to work, work responsibly, work up the ladder as far as you can go in a company. I got up the ladder pretty quickly in a lot of companies, to very senior positions. And then I was like, wait a minute, do I want to do this for the rest of my life? And the answer was no. The answer was, I like the excitement of building. I like the excitement of new territories and new industries. And so that is really sort of my larger calling on this stuff than, like, am I a crazy risk taker, you know, jumping out of, you know, corporate jobs, for, you know, playing the equivalent of that? No.
Well, they seem to have worked out. So it's not like, it's not like you're risk embracing with no upside. You seem to be appropriately risk embracing, or at least looking at, with the advantage of hindsight bias, looking at the track record, it seems that you took the right amount of risk at the right time in the right places, or you've just been on an incredibly lucky run of dice, and I don't believe it's the latter. I think it's the former.
Well, you know, I do think experience gives you something, and I can cut the line in many things, in figuring out how to get to the person, to the right group. I'm advising two young women that dropped out of Stanford that you'll hear about soon, and help them raise money for a very interesting product. And we were able to sort of short circuit the system and get them in front of the right people very quickly. And, you know, I can bring that skill to a lot of different scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to do, right? And the sort of three key areas I focus on my life are, number one is really financial well-being. I want everybody to just makes your life better on every front. You know, number two is really female leadership and, you know, getting them to be, all of us to be confident enough to take risks and to like stand up and speak and not be afraid of the consequences in those situations. And then the third category that we've talked a little bit about is I really love resale luxury. Uh-huh. And I think it's, you know, a very big growth market.
Well, you're in the right city for it.
If I was ever going to be, I wrote a plan a couple years back to do an activist takeover of the RealReal. I got some uh-huh. investors together. I just hate the way that company is run. So if there's anybody out there listening, I wrote a plan, but they have a $300 million convertible debt note that triggers in a change of control. So I abandoned
And they're
that.
Private, right?
No, they're public.
They went public, the RealReal?
They went public. I was an investor. They went out at like $2 billion. I think it's worth, you know, $150 million today. I can't even look at it because it's so painful.
Down 85% usually engenders a change in control.
I understand. But so in the meantime, that market is going to grow like crazy. So I'm working on a few projects in that category. But, you know, I and it's also a community-based product, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people are buying from each other. There's an unbelievable world of crazy stuff going on Instagram and social selling and those platforms. And I think that will be a big, big market for a long time to come. So, you know, I feel fortunate that I can do what I want to do, and I get to sit here and talk to you about it mm-hmm. and, like, sort of look back on it and say, oh, yeah, I was so smart. But, you know, I kept swinging the bat is really what it came down to.
Smart. Persistent, a little bit of luck, that's a great combination. Tell us what you're streaming these days. What are you watching or listening?
I am watching The New Look because I love fashion mm-hmm. and I love history. So I love a documentary. So that's what I'm watching these days.
Have you watched, what is it, Palm Royale?
Not yet.
If you want to see a just lovingly photographed set of fashion and...
Great.
The way it's done is spectacular.
On the list.
On the list. Let's talk about mentors who helped shape your career.
There was a guy, I was on the board of CARE, which is the world's largest NGO, for 6 years. And there was a really excellent McKinsey partner that ran the board practices, Paul Janssen. And he taught me how to be a good board member. Hmm. And being a good board member means you don't talk too much and that you are supportive in critical moments of decision. So he was one. I think, you know, Steve Ballmer taught me a lot about how to think in an engineering mindset and think about technology. I think an entrepreneur and someone that starts a company is sort of the bravest soul in the world right now. So anything I can learn from them, I do.
Huh, really interesting. Let's talk about books. What are some of your favorites? What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Midnight Express, a tale about someone that helps her sister through hospice and then takes mushrooms to overcome depression and anxiety.
So not the 70s era movie about...
No.
About bringing hashish into Turkey.
No.
Totally different.
Yes, totally different.
Huh. Yeah. And give me one more.
Financially Fearless by Katie Song, which was written out of a need. Facebook group moms would ping her every day about financial advice. So she sat down over a weekend and wrote a book for them. And we self-published it and we give it to every tech mom we know. So they have a financial plan.
Financially Fearless. And let's throw a bone to Kara. What your friend Kara Swisher, what's her new book that's out?
Burn. Who doesn't love Burn?
Right.
You know, I told Kara I was coming here today. She's like, Barry is a very good podcaster. I've been on a
few. I have to get her back in to talk about the book because it's literally, I just finished a book for next week's podcast.
Yeah.
And her book is literally next in my queue.
I'm in the book.
I know.
So the book was fun. You know, Kara is.
She's fearless.
There is nobody more fearless than Kara Swisher.
She absolutely does.
There's nobody.
She names names and leaves bodies and bam.
Also loves work, loves to invent, loves to be ahead of things. Really a very, very sharp person.
Very much so. So our final two questions. What sort of advice would you give to a recent college grad who is interested in a career in fill in the blank? Finance, technology, startups, venture. What's the advice to that recent graduate?
Yeah, do your research. So if you want to go into finance, there's two women that run a Instagram channel called Wall Street Skinny. They teach you how to get jobs and money. You should have them on the show. They both worked
in Wall Street Skinny.
Wall Street Skinny. They're amazing. They always cite you, but they teach you the ins and outs of how to get a job in finance on every front. I think if you are going to get a job at a public company, you should read their annual report.
The company itself.
The company.
You're going to ABC Bank, read ABC Bank's annual report.
100%. Like, first stop on the hit parade, go read the annual report. It's their strategy document. It's what they tell people.
That's very astute.
You have to do it, right? Like, you read it, you are further ahead than most employees there.
Wow.
So do your research, right? You know, I've gone deep into, you know, filings, like SEC filings. Like, I before I go work with a company that's public, I look at every exec's comp package. Like, I love to, you know, dumpster dive through SEC filings. It's not that hard to do. Set your alerts. So do your research. Know what the person cares about. Know what the company cares about. And have interest in them, and also bring them ideas. My daughter was once looking for a job, and freelance job, and I said, just remake the person's website. It was a company I invested in. Their website drove me crazy, and she's a designer. And I said, he's not going to tell you what he wants, so just do it and send it to him. So she did it and sent it to him, and he hired her to do that project.
On the spot, right.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't want to do spec work. And I'm like, well, it's when you're starting off, you have to do some spec work. It's just the way it is.
That's tremendous advice. Our final question, what do you know about the world of investing, startups, marketing, and branding today you wish you knew a couple of decades ago when you were first getting started?
Do not fight so hard on your brand. So I have a brand I advise. It was called Fordays, Fordays.com. They sold you a t-shirt, and at the end of life, you could send the t-shirt back. I worked with the CEO. I said, look, this needs to look a little more like Skittles and be bright. She has rebranded it to trashy.io. has a deal with Walmart and sold out of her take back bags that are going viral on Instagram. And it was too hard to explain what 4 days was.
Right.
Trashy.io, send your old clothes back, get cash reward for it. Very simple, straightforward. It's on a tear right now. When you overcomplicate what you're selling, it's impossible. Nobody can listen. Nobody can follow it. You white out. So you got to keep it simple.
Huh. Really, really fascinating stuff. Joanne, thank you for being so generous with your time. We have been speaking with Joanne Bradford of Honey, Pinterest, Yahoo, Wealth.com, Domain Money. Go down the whole list. If you enjoy this conversation, check out any of the previous 500 or so we've done over the past 9.5 years. You can find those at iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Check out my new podcast, At the Money, 10-minute conversations with experts about your money, earning it, spending it, and most importantly, investing it. Find it in the Masters in Business feed or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I would be remiss if I did not thank the crack team that helps put these conversations together each week. Sarah Livesey is my audio engineer. Atika Valbrun is my project manager. Anna Luke is my producer. Sean Russo is my researcher. I'm Barry Ritholtz. You've been listening to Masters in Business on Bloomberg Radio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.